Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Greetings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, the Alpine Avalanche, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Hello, this is Michael reading the Big Bend Sentinel for the week of April 19th, 2020. I'm reading on Thursday, April 23rd. I'm going to be reading the sites for each city they'll be testing in, the times, the locations, the number to contact, as well as information about the testing. Before I get to each individual city, I'll read about the screenings. You will be screened to see if you have fever and or chills, cough, dry or productive, fatigue, body aches, muscle or joint pain, shortness of breath, sore throat, headaches, nausea, vomiting or diarrhea, nasal congestion, and loss of taste and or smell. Here are the numbers to register, because you must pre-register before you can go in to get the screenings. These will be the same for all of the cities, and I will repeat them after each city. The website is txcovidtest.org, txcovidtest.org. And the phone number you can call, 512-883-2400. Again, 512-883-2400. And I will repeat that phone number, so if you didn't get it this time, you'll have another chance. Tests are conducted by appointment only. The first city we'll read about is testing in Alpine. That's going to be April 25th, and that is a Saturday. So Saturday, April 25th. The time will be 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's going to be at the North Brewster County Emergency Response Center. That's at 102 South 2nd Street in Alpine. So again, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. this Saturday, April 25th in Alpine. Next will be Presidio. Presidio's testing is Sunday, April 26th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the City of Presidio EMS and Fire Station, 100 East FM 170. And the next is Marfa. Marfa's testing will be Saturday, April 25th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Marfa Visitor Center, 302 South Highland Avenue. And Terlingua, your mobile test collection will be Sunday, April 26th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the South Brewster County Emergency Response Center, 23250 FM 170. Here's the number once again to call, because, again, the tests are conducted by appointment only, so you must call before you go in. The phone number, again, is 512-883-2400. Now we'll move on to our news articles from the Big Bend Sentinel. Most of these, including this one, were published Wednesday, April 22nd. Anti-price gouging efforts in Tri-County leave more questions than answers. A non-existent store has so far been the target of the only coronavirus-related price gouging complaint in the Tri-County area, by Stephen Paulson. Have you paid too much for meat at Quarters Grocery Store in Alpine? Probably not, because a store with that name does not appear to exist. And yet, the non-existent store has so far been the target of the only coronavirus-related price gouging complaint in the Tri-County area, according to records from the Texas Attorney General's office. The document also includes the name and contact information of the person who reportedly filed the complaint. But when the Big Bend Sentinel called the number, the person on the other end did not recognize the name from AG Records and said she had not filed a price gouging complaint. The Texas AG's office says it takes price gouging seriously and has issued stern warnings to businesses not to hike prices during a pandemic. As of Monday, it's received over 8,500 coronavirus-related complaints, including over 7,500 complaints of alleged price gouging. In the Tri-County, though, those efforts raise more questions than answers. After weeks of inquiries from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Texas Attorney General's office could not provide any more clarity on the Alpine complaint. The Big Bend Sentinel first requested records on all price gouging complaints in the Tri-County area in March, after the Marfa City Council considered, but ultimately decided against, filing a price gouging complaint against Porter's. The AG's office quickly honored that request. The office's one local record from March 23rd involves quarters. The store was selling chicken for $14, the two-page document says, citing a report from a complainant. Ground meat was going for $10. After informing the AG's office that such a store does not appear to exist, the AG's office repeatedly said it would contact its Consumer Protection Division to clear up the confusion. But as of this week, the Big Bend Sentinel has still received no more clarity on the complaint. Finally, on Monday, a spokesperson said the complaint was received by voicemail and acknowledged there could have been a mistake in either giving or receiving the information in the complaint. Complainants can withdraw complaints or refile them if there is an error, that spokesperson said. The agency also documents if it cannot contact complainants, she said. Because Porter's has a similar name, runs two grocery stores in Alpine, and was the subject of a Marfa City Council meeting on price increases last month, the Big Bend Sentinel asked the AG's office if the complaint might concern Porter's, which does exist, rather than Quarters, which does not. In the response, the AG's office said it could not confirm or deny investigations, but that the office was aware of allegations involving the store. Kai Ellison, a spokesperson for Porter's, said on Monday that was news to him. "We have not heard anything from the Texas Attorney General's office," he said, "nor do we expect to." The Big Bend Sentinel has asked the AG's office for updated information on price gouging complaints in the Big Bend. Students, teachers, and parents at MISD find a new normal. Marfa. Imagining the rest of his time at Marfa High School, senior Brian Torres thought he would be coming back from spring break, having fun, and having a normal graduation. But the hope of a return to normalcy for Marfa ISD students, teachers, and parents was dashed this week when Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced public schools, private schools, and higher education institutions will be closed at least through the end of the semester. Marfa ISD first announced a temporary closure last month due to the coronavirus. Cherry Aguero, the Montessori teacher for 18 fourth, fifth, and sixth grade students, said, "At the beginning, it was really very scary because most everything in my classroom was hands-on. The other thing I was so worried about was losing contact, touch with them. I wanted to make them feel okay and that we were still here." This past Tuesday, Aguero says the class celebrated their first digital birthday. Birthdays are always a big deal in her classroom, where the class and parents take time to celebrate the student's life. The first one online needed to be special, too. She had students secretly prepare signs ahead of time and surprised the birthday student by having his classmates all show their signs together on Zoom. When the school initially closed, Aguero immediately instituted Zoom calls that gather her students. Twice a week, the full class meets, and on the other days, various students meet with Aguero for reading groups. She is incorporating lessons from the art, music, and PE teachers to keep kids active during the day, and she has given assignments to help students process the changes and understand why the schools are closed. "I see my students every single day, even if it's just for 20 or 30 minutes. Then I've crazily made myself available by email, phone, texting, any way I can get a hold of kiddos and they can get a hold of me," she said. for when they need to say, I don't understand that, Mrs. Aguero. MISD parent Sarah Martinez said so far her two kids are getting along okay. They get on their Chromebook, log in, see what they need to do, and sit down and do it, she said. But Martinez said it is tough when her kids aren't understanding their work and don't have a teacher there to help. The only time it's stressful is when one of them is confused or stuck on something, and I can feel their anxiety or stress because they can't ask their teacher and their teacher isn't right there, she said. Though Martinez said she's blessed to have kids who motivate themselves, she can't be of much help when her 9-year-old daughter is struggling. I can help a little, but when it's like, where's the link, I can't help with that, she said, speaking about the technological challenges, as well as the differences in instruction from when she was in school herself. Particularly, the way math is taught in Texas has changed drastically over the past few decades, putting parents at odds with being able to help their kids. Martinez works for the county, and while her older son, who attends Alpine Montessori, can stay home, she's currently bringing her daughter to the office with her now that school is out. Daycare isn't an option in Marfa either, so some parents with students suddenly at home are forced to figure out how to balance work and homeschooling. Aguero and other teachers in the school have stayed in contact with parents about how to help their kids along. Some of the kids are choosing to sleep in and work later in the day. Others are up and emailing me in the morning. You have the personality differences and the ones whose parents are there with them and the ones who aren't. That's not necessarily a bad thing. And Aguero is accommodating students by setting all of their class meetings later in the day. Aguero said, the first week was really chaotic because I didn't know how to do anything. It was about us learning as we went. A month into it, we've worked through the kinks. The technological challenges have been a learning experience for many as they have been forced to rapidly adjust to the digital classroom. But another change due to coronavirus is giving some relief. Statewide STAR testing has been canceled for the year. It releases the pressure from the kids. They still were asking me, Mrs. Aguero, are they going to give the STAR test in the summer? That is how stressed out they get about the STAR tests, she said. It's finally released them from that, and it allows me more of an opportunity to broaden things. I don't have to be so uber-focused. While the students will still learn testing skills, the teacher says it doesn't have to be on the test schedule anymore. And with the technological learning curve, Aguero said all of the energy I would use to make sure they were getting the test-taking strategies is now translated to how to use the technology. Students receive their assignments digitally and are finally hitting a rhythm of working from home. Helping along the way was Big Ben Telephone, which set up hotspots for students to access the internet if they didn't have it already. The FCC even recognized the company for going above and beyond. An older student, like Torres, the senior, says he gets his work done with ease. He's at home with his mom, freshman sister, and pre-kindergarten brother, while his dad works at Village Farms. In the mornings, the house is bustling as they all do their work. Even my little brother has his assignments. He's learning how to spell, Torres said. In fact, the senior finishes his work early so he can help his little brother. I'm kind of his little tutor. Out of all of this, I think the younger kids are most affected because the first years of school are the fundamental ones. I've been trying to do my best for him to not get off track so he's not behind once he starts kindergarten. Torres said he misses sports the most. He plays football, basketball, cross country, and track. But he's no longer able to do ballet folklorico or student council. It's been a pretty crazy year, he reflects. Even before seniors lost their prom, senior activities, and last few months spent in the halls of Marfa High together due to coronavirus closures, their homecoming game disappeared when their competitors dropped out at the last minute. It's pretty sad staying home. I keep in touch with my friends through the phone, but not as much as I wish, he said. It's pretty hard not being with them. Even though I'll stay in touch with my classmates, I'm friends with underclassmen too. These were my last days with them, and that's thrown out the window now. The seniors are holding out hope for a graduation if Governor Abbott allows it. Seniors like Bella Morales are hopeful that if they push back the date, they'll be able to get together for graduation and not have to limit attendance to immediate family. Sadly, I kind of think, why our class? But things happen. This is just a little barrier along the way, and as a class, we're going to overcome it. It's kind of like a little glimpse that in life, not everything is easy, and we have to adjust, said Torres. Earlier this year, our opponents canceled for our homecoming game. We overcame it. We found solutions. And that's what we're going to do with this. Find solutions. Leach defamation suit against alleged victim moves to appeals court. By Stephen Paulson, Terlingua. As concerns over the coronavirus upend the court system, the defamation suit brought by Jeff Leach against a former employee and alleged assault victim has gained an unexpected second life in appeals court. After Terlingua hotelier Leach was indicted on a felony sexual assault charge and a local judge threw out his defamation case against an alleged victim, his lawyers last month appealed the lawsuit to the 8th Court of Appeals in El Paso. Those judges on March 26th ordered that the defamation suit could be continued as a personal injury mediation, meaning a mediator and not a court judge could now oversee the case. The appeals court judges in that case could not be reached for comment. A spokesperson for the 8th Court of Appeals said the court automatically issues orders for mediation, which the other party can then oppose. Still, the developments have left Jody Cole, a lawyer for lawsuit defendant and alleged assault victim Katie Milam, feeling blindsided. As she wrote in a court filing last week, the news of the appeal came as she was extremely ill with what appears to be COVID-19. She had to shut down her law practice to comply with quarantine requirements, couldn't meet with Milam in person, and was too ill to file legal responses, according to her filing. Last year, Jeff Leach, a self-described diet and gut researcher and the founder of Basecamp Terlingua, sued a former employee for defamation and intentional infliction of emotional distress. The employee, Katie Milam, told police that Leach allegedly held her down and told her he gets what he wants. That lawsuit, which a local judge threw out in February, brought additional allegations to light. During the case, at least three more women filed affidavits alleging that Leach had sexually assaulted or raped them. Airbnb dropped Basecamp Terlingua from its listings, citing the allegations. And in a criminal case that's still ongoing, a grand jury indicted Leach in March for felony sexual assault based on the account of one of the alleged victims. Within days of the lawsuit's dismissal, Leach's lawyers announced an intent to appeal. They soon did just that. Ray Leifest, a lawyer for Leach, argued in a motion to appeal in March that a Brewster County court had wrongly thrown out the case. Milam's lawyers had missed filing deadlines, and Leach was never able to present his side of the case, Leifest argued in the filing. Milam's lawyers had introduced evidence they said demonstrated Leach's character. In 2003, for example, an El Paso court ruled that Leach violated deceptive trade practice and consumer protection rules after he reportedly billed people for magazines that never came, and a Middle East tour that never materialized. But Leifest argued these rulings were not widely known to the public and therefore should not have excluded Leach from suing for defamation. Besides, Leifest argues, Milam's lawyers did not show Leach had a well-known reputation for raping, sexual assaulting, and harassing others. And though multiple women came forward with allegations against Leach during the trial, Leifest writes, they have questionable biases. Cole, one of Milam's lawyers, opposes the appeal, including the request for a personal injury mediation. This is not a personal injury case, she wrote in a filing last week. Leach sexually harassed and assaulted Milam, and then sued her for defamation and intentional infliction of emotional distress when Milam reported the conduct to law enforcement. Leifest did not respond to a request for comment on the appeal. County jail population stays steady despite coronavirus's outsized spread among the incarcerated. By Stephen Paulson, Marfa. At last count, the Presidio jail has 36 inmates, a pretty typical number. Just one of them, a county inmate on an aggravated assault charge, is waiting for county court. The rest are being held for federal authorities, like the U.S. Marshals Service, for crimes involving drugs and illegal entry, said Gracie Parras, the jail administrator for Presidio County. Parras says the number of federal detainees is going down, but for now, they still represent a vast majority of inmates at the local jail. The inmates share cells, but the jail is still trying to take other precautions, Parras said. Workers disinfect cells an extra time each day, and attorneys are screened before they visit. In an interview earlier this month, Sandy Wilson, the district attorney for the Tri-County area, was working to get bonds or temporary releases for nonviolent inmates. It's part of compassionate release efforts seen across the country to keep local jails from becoming vectors for coronavirus, though both Wilson and Parras stressed that most nonviolent local inmates were getting bonded out even before the pandemic. But while local authorities are taking precautions, hires up from the governor's office to the Federal Bureau of Prisons have been much slower to release inmates, if they have at all. With a slew of new lawsuits this month, detainees and inmates have become a flashpoint in debates over how government authorities can and should respond to the coronavirus. First, there are inmates in immigrant detention centers. CBP last month told the Big Bend Sentinel that it is adjudicating some cases in the field, a process that keeps undocumented migrants out of detention centers, but on the flip side, also fast-tracks deportations. Federal authorities have deported around 20,000 people since February, the New York Times reported last week, including some who later tested positive for coronavirus in their destination countries. CBP did not respond to a follow-up request this week to clarify its coronavirus policies. But these new policies have done little to reduce numbers at already packed detention centers, and coronavirus has already popped up among detained immigrants. At a detention center near Miami, federal authorities acknowledged in court filings this week that more than half of the roughly 600 detainees had been exposed to coronavirus. And in Texas, the American Civil Liberties Union is suing federal officials in an effort to release medically vulnerable inmates from a facility near Houston. The lawsuit, filed earlier this month, lists at least four detainees that the ACLU says are at a heightened risk of getting very sick or dying from COVID-19, including a 58-year-old with diabetes, asthma, and sleep apnea who has been detained since February, and a 37-year-old with breathing issues who has been in detention since last August. Detention centers like the Montgomery Processing Center cannot adequately protect the lives of those like our clients, Andre Segura, the ACLU's legal director in Texas, said in a statement. There is no way to practice social distancing in a detention center, and they do not have access to face masks or even regular access to basic hygiene. Limiting the number of people held in jails is critical to prevent a COVID-19 outbreak at MPC and the surrounding community, he added. That isn't the only ACLU coronavirus lawsuit filed this month involving inmates in Texas. The organization is also suing Governor Greg Abbott and Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton over what the group says is an illegal executive order, hindering the ability of local judges to enact compassionate release measures. The case centers on Houston, where activists and legal groups have been fighting for years to overturn cash bail rules that keep defendants in jail before trial because they can't make cash bonds. During a coronavirus in Houston, Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo ordered hundreds of local defendants released, but state orders preventing releases, as well as an order from a district judge, halted those efforts. That's the crux of the ACLU lawsuit. The organization argues that Governor Abbott's order stymieing compassionate releases is a violation of state disaster rules and the Texas Constitution. Local governments across the state have sought to implement the recommendations of public health experts, not only for the general population, but also for those in their custody, the ACLU argued in their initial lawsuit from earlier this month. But Abbott's executive order frustrates these efforts and unlawfully undercuts the authority of judges and the legislature, the suit argues. Fights like this go well beyond Texas, though. In a case involving an outbreak at a federal prison in North Carolina, a judge over the weekend demanded that an inmate immediately be released. The Bureau of Prisons had already approved the inmate's release, and yet he was still in prison, because federal prison rules required inmates to be quarantined together for 14 days. That timeline can apparently be extended indefinitely if one or more of the quarantined inmates tests positive during that time. Noting that these quarantine rules effectively created new disease vectors, the judge called the rules illogical, self-defeating, and a danger to inmates and local communities. She ordered prison officials to release him immediately. Marfa Airport gets boost from federal coronavirus relief bill by Abby Perot. Presidio County. The Marfa Municipal Airport will receive $30,000 in federal relief funds, a part of the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, CARES Act, passed by Congress on March 27th. The relief bill included $10 billion in funding to provide economic relief for U.S. airports affected by the prevention of, preparation for, and response to the COVID-19 pandemic. As Texas reels from the economic destruction caused by the coronavirus outbreak, it's important our airports have the resources they need to weather the storm, Texas Senator John Cornyn said. I commend both the Trump administration and leaders in Marfa who worked to secure these funds during this trying time. The funding is intended to support continued operations at airports across the country, as well as provide some relief for lost revenue during the pandemic. According to the United States Department of Transportation, the funds can be used for airport capital expenditures, airport operating expenses, including payroll and utilities, and airport debt payments. The neighboring Alpine Casparis Municipal Airport in Alpine was awarded $20,000 in the bill, but the Presidio Lely International Airport was left out of the federal relief package because it has not yet received classification as a National Plan of Integrated Airport Systems, NPIAS, airport. Presidio County Airport Director Chase Snodgrass said the county has applied, but they have not heard back. And while they meet some of the criteria, there are certain aspects of the Presidio Lely Airport that could mean they aren't qualified. But Snodgrass suspects that most of the $30,000 of funds will be used to make up for lost revenues since traffic through Marfa Municipal Airport has slowed. Before the coronavirus, the airport was breaking its own records, bringing in funds faster than ever. Snodgrass said the airport sold more fuel every month of this fiscal year compared to last year. Then the coronavirus hit. In March, the two airports sold 4,000 gallons, and the previous March, we sold 10,000 gallons. Those months of high revenues will hopefully help offset budget shortfalls. The county made 76% of its budgeted income in 6 months, meaning the latter half of the year does not need to be as stressful in order to keep them afloat. My proposal would be to put it in the airport revenue and use it to replace what was lost in fuel sales, Snodgrass said. Airport revenue covers the costs of insurance, vehicles, salaries, electricity, and smaller airport improvement projects that don't qualify as capital improvement projects. We were terribly optimistic before this coronavirus nonsense, the director said. Now, fuel sales have dropped off by 75% less in volume by gallon over March and April. I don't know how long it will continue. April looks to be the same way, he said. As for the $30,000 infusion of federal money, Snodgrass said, that $30,000 just barely makes up for that. I hope we start recovering and people start flying again. People are still flying in, but we're not getting the big jets from New Jersey and California that we normally do, he said. Marfa Nutrition Program expands to 7 days a week. The Marfa Nutrition Center is now offering meals 7 days per week. The expanded home delivery program comes after more than $20,000 in funding from Meals on Wheels America and the Permian Basin Area Foundation was awarded to the center over the last week. For now, weekend meals will be shelf-stable options and delivered with Friday's hot meal. However, city administration is working on a plan to utilize local restaurants to ensure senior citizens are getting hot meals every day of the week. We're thrilled to be able to offer this new service, said Community Services Director Mandy Roan. The funds from our generous donors and the amazing staff and volunteers at the Nutrition Center are reasons we're able to do this. I'm excited to get this off the ground and see how far we can take it. The new meal plan comes after COVID-19 concerns caused the in-house senior meal program to be temporarily closed and all seniors switched to home delivery. Nutrition Center Director Ed Kobos also worked to add almost 20 new clients to the list, bringing the total meals served daily to 107. The meals we deliver each day go to some of our most vulnerable citizens, and we want to do whatever we can to keep them as healthy as possible, said Roan. We're hopeful our new plan will keep them fed and safe through the pandemic. For more information about the Senior Nutrition Program or any of the city's other community services, contact Mandy Roan at librarydirector@cityofmarfa.com or call 432-729-4315. That's 432-729-4315. And our last two articles are a couple of fun articles we're going to read from the Big Bend Sentinel this week. The first one, Campus World War I exhibit transitions to online format. The Brian Wallenfel Memorial Library, archives of the Big Bend and the Museum of the Big Bend, recently finished a collaboration focusing on the transition of a World War I exhibit at the library to a virtual format. World War I Lessons and Legacies is organized by the Smithsonian Institution's Traveling Exhibition Service and the National Museum of American History. The exhibit has been in the works since fall 2019 and is supported by SRSU history faculty, according to Betsy Evans, Director of Access, Instruction, and Outreach. We were originally planning to host an in-person exhibit on the second floor of the library following spring break with documents and photos from the archives and real artifacts from the Museum of the Big Bend, Evans said. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the closure of the Sol Ross campus to the public, we decided to transform the exhibit to an online format to share with people and still be able to give some true regional context about the Great War. Evans noted that the university hopes to share the artifacts and documents in person at a later date. Of great excitement in our planning phase was a panoramic photo taken in 1919 of soldiers, sailors, and American Red Cross workers in front of the Brewster County Courthouse in Alpine, said Evans. The photo was taken by Duncan Photo of Marfa, Texas. To view the online exhibit, visit /library.solross.edu/presenting-world-war-1-lessons-and-legacies. 34th Annual Trappings of Texas goes digital. The Museum of the Big Bend's 34th Annual Trappings of Texas is now online. Though we will not be able to meet together because of the current health crisis with COVID-19, we will still be able to host our annual show and sale via an online format, said Mary Bones, museum director. The sale will continue through August 2nd. Bones said as works are sold and shipped, artists will have new works available for purchase on the Trappings website. This will create an evolving new show and sale on a continuing basis, said Bones. Solross graduate and artist Phil Bob Borman will have three works on display. Fellow alumnus and gear maker Wayne Franklin will display two metal works. Paintings by Alice Leese will also be featured, along with silver pendants, jewelry, knife, and buckle works from Buddy Knight. This year's premiered artist is Brian Asher of Fort Worth. Considered one of the best Western art and custom cowboy gear exhibits and sales in the country, Trappings of Texas showcases the work of both up-and-coming and well-established artists. Please know your purchases help to support our artists and the Museum of the Big Bend, Bone said. We look forward to working with you. To see this year's offerings, visit https://www.museumofthebigbend.com/trappings-of-Texas.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, April 23rd. Pecos County confirms 7th local coronavirus case. A 47-year-old woman was announced as Pecos County's 7th confirmed coronavirus case. Today's announcement by Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster marks the first new confirmed case locally in nearly 1 week. According to Schuster, the woman is in self-quarantine at home with her husband. The test was done by PCMH and was cited as community spread. Updates on the quarantine status of the previous 6 cases have not been released yet by the county. Confirmed cases. Here are the confirmed cases of COVID-19 for Pecos County as of April 22nd, according to Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster. Case number 1, a 54-year-old woman was tested at Malik Medical Clinic on March 27th. Her test results came back from a private laboratory on April 4th. Exposure source not determined. Home quarantine could have ended April 12th, but the county has not provided an update. Case number 2, 50-year-old male was tested at Malik Medical Clinic. According to Schuster, the man is listed as a close member to case number 1. Schuster said he could not provide additional information on the relationship. He is home quarantined. Case number 3, a male listed in the 65 to 70 age group. He reportedly came in contact with case number 2. He is home quarantined. He was tested at Malik Medical Clinic. Case number 4, 49-year-old male was tested at Malik Medical Clinic. Schuster did not have the test date. He said the contact is not yet known. Case number 5, 39-year-old male tested at Malik Medical Clinic. Source contact not released. Self-quarantined. Case number 6, inmate at TDCJ N5 unit in Fort Stockton. No other information available. Case number 7, 47-year-old female is self-quarantined at home with her husband. Test was done by PCMH and was cited as community spread. In addition, 2 people from El Paso County tested positive at Pecos County Memorial Hospital and are quarantining at a home in Pecos County. These cases have been assigned by the state to the tracking totals for El Paso County. Testing stats. Here are the Pecos County testing stats as of 2 p.m. April 22nd. Total, 79 tested, 60 negative, 10 pending, 7 positives, 2 positives but refer to El Paso County per DSHS, 0 recovered. Obituaries from the Fort Stockton Pioneer. Alex R. Gonzalez, Alejandro Ramon Gonzalez, was born on June 17, 1932 in Fort Stockton. The son of Manuel R. M. R. Gonzalez Sr. and Carmen Gutierrez Gonzalez. Alex R. Gonzalez is survived by his brothers, Manuel R. M. R. Gonzalez Jr., Abelardo Gonzalez, and Oscar Gonzalez. His 4 children, Amara Christie de la Garza, Linda Howard Birch, Alex John and wife Carol Gonzalez, and Arthur R. and wife Denise Gonzalez, as well as his former wife, Sinaida Yurita Gonzalez, and their 9 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Private services will be held in order to abide by the current social distancing guidelines suggested for the public. A memorial service will be held at a later date for friends, family, and community members to offer their condolences and celebrate the impact of his life. Miles Roland Warnock, beloved younger brother, went to be with his Lord on April 11, 2020. Born in Biloxi, Mississippi on December 26, 1954, to Dr. Frank and Kathleen Warnock. Miles is survived by his wife of 26 years, Vanessa, his daughter Maya, son Hunter, and his brother Kirby. Surviving family also includes nieces, nephews, cousins, and in-laws from Texas to Mississippi. A celebration of life will be held at a later date when all are able to come together properly. In lieu of flowers, the family is requesting that donations in his name be made to the Fort Stockton Historical Society, 301 South Main, Fort Stockton, Texas, 79735. Wallace Dan Yarbrough, 67, of Imperial, Texas, passed away Tuesday, April 14th in Odessa. A private graveside service was held Saturday, April 18th in Rural Cemetery under the direction of Haskell Funeral Home. Condolences may be made at www.haskellfuneralhometx.com. Wallace was born August 18, 1952, in Levelland, Texas, the son of Orman Yarbrough and Opal May Anderson Yarbrough. He was preceded in death by his father, Orman L. Yarbrough. Wallace is survived by his mother, sisters Deanne Crawford of Imperial, Sandy Deal of Lubbock, and Susie Wingar of Leander, brother Randy Yarbrough of Arlington, and numerous nieces, nephews, great-nieces, and nephews, and a host of dear friends. Arnold Dean Braden went to join the Lord on April 14th. He was born on January 26, 1951, in San Angelo. He is survived by his wife of 42 years, Debbie Braden, of Imperial, Texas. his sons Jeremy and wife Whitney of Midland, Zach and wife Laura of New Braunfels, and daughter Ashley Chilton and husband Josh of Billings, Montana. He was blessed with 6 grandchildren. He is also survived by brother Alton Braden and wife Joyce of Kerrville, sisters Melva Halfman and husband Wilbert of Rowena, Texas, Marilyn Moeller and husband Dalton of Wall, Texas, brother-in-laws Don McAkern and wife Denise of Hobbs, New Mexico, Jay McAkern of Benton, Louisiana, Bob McAkern and wife Joanna of Hobbs, and numerous dearly loved nephews and nieces. He was preceded in death by mother and father, Lorraine and Melvin Braden. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be made to the American Diabetes Association. The Garage Coffee, Music, and More announces permanent closure. The Garage Coffee, Music, and More, a Fort Stockton business known for hot coffee by day and hot music on weekend nights, announced that it will not reopen after previously closing due to the coronavirus pandemic. Here is the text of the letter posted to the Garage's website. Coffee Shop News. It is with a heavy heart and many tears that we must make the official announcement that the Garage Coffee Shop will not be reopening. After weighing the effects of having to be closed in response to COVID-19, we had to make some very, very tough choices, and unfortunately we cannot continue. We know this is a difficult decision to understand, but there are many factors involved in keeping the garage alive, from supply chains and product costs to licensing and overhead. We spent 5 years working to get the garage to where it was just beginning to become a stable, profitable business, not just self-sustaining. And we simply are not prepared, financially or emotionally, to start back over. And starting back over is what would mean if we decided to try to open our doors when the COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. We are proud of what we built and thank each of every one of you who supported us and our vision along the way. We feel Fort Stockton is losing something special with the closure of the garage, and we feel that loss in a way that just can't be expressed in words. We spent all of last week of watching, waiting, and weighing finances and projections. We had to make the decision on Sunday, April 19th, to call it. The Garage Coffee Shop will not make it through COVID-19 and will be unable to open its doors, even if all restrictions were lifted tomorrow. While the coffee shop isn't opening, we are hoping to be able to at least put on the concerts we already have scheduled, if gathering limitations are lifted. But even then, we don't know what the future of the venue is or how we will proceed. It was an agonizing decision to make. All of the owners poured everything they had, not only financially but emotionally and physically, into building the garage up over the past 5 years. And no, we are leaving not only a huge hole in our community, but in the tour plans of the many artists, managers, and support teams we have been honored to get to know over the years. More than anything, the feedback we received from artists has been the fuel that kept our passion for an all-ages venue in Fort Stockton alive. From the very bottom of our hearts, thank you for an amazing 5 years and 7 months. We will miss seeing you each day and having the opportunity to make your day a bit brighter with a truly exceptional cup of coffee and a smile. We hope that if we are able to offer you events and concerts, that we get to see each and every single one of you again. Keep rocking. Brian, Renee, Chrissy, Allie, and Bailey.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read the Fort Stockton Pioneer. This article was published Thursday, April 23rd. Ira Ann ISD selects finalist for superintendent post. Dr. Tracy Cantor of Ector ISD tops field of 7 applicants. The Ira Ann Sheffield ISD Board of Trustees, at its April 22nd meeting, named Dr. Tracy Cantor, currently from Ector County ISD, as finalist for superintendent, By law, the vote must now wait 21 days before voting to hire Dr. Cantor to be the new superintendent for Ira and Sheffield ISD. Cantor is slated to replace outgoing superintendent Michael Meek. The board has followed a lengthy process in determining the finalist. In February, the board hired Texas Association of School Boards, TASB, Executive Search Services to direct the search. A leadership profile assessment questionnaire appeared on the Ira and Sheffield ISD website. The results of the questionnaire was the yardstick used by the board and consultants in evaluating the applicants for the position. The board selected 7 applicants for the initial interview, and then 3 applicants were invited back for a second interview. The board is scheduled to vote to offer a contract to Cantor on May 14th. Cantor has served as the Executive Director of Special Services in Ector County ISD since July 2015. Fort Stockton ISD issues statement on Governor Abbott keeping classrooms closed through spring semester. The Fort Stockton ISD issued the following statement after Governor Abbott announced that K-12 college and university classrooms will remain closed through this spring semester. Texas governor announced Friday, April 17th, that Texas schools will be closed for the remainder of the school year and that public education, as we know, will continue remotely. With the governor's announcement, Fort Stockton ISD will continue with remote education in the best interest of our students. In the coming weeks, FSISD will continue to work with parents, students, and staff, providing meals and instruction, as well as how we will address end-of-the-year activities. There are many unanswered questions, and we appreciate the patience of our parents, staff, and community have given us during these trying times. FSISD will always have health and safety as the first priority of our students, staff, and community when making decisions with the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Texas Department of State Health Services, and our local officials. Thank you, and we appreciate your patience in working with FSISD during these challenging times. Showing COVID-19 symptoms? Free COVID-19 mobile testing unit in Fort Stockton on Monday, April 27th. Only people showing symptoms and clearing a screening will be tested. Call to make an appointment. The Texas National Guard mobile testing teams will be in Fort Stockton to offer free COVID-19 testing on Monday, April 27th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Airport Fire Station Building, 180 A Street. There are a limited amount of test kits, and this test is only for people showing symptoms of COVID-19. People will have to clear a pre-test screening process in order to be tested. Please do not try to schedule a test unless you are showing symptoms. Remember, test results are only as good as the day you are tested. You can be negative for the virus one day and catch it the next. Tests are a diagnostic tool meant to determine if someone needs to be in quarantine or receive additional medical attention. It will be done by appointments only, so you must go online or call to begin registration within 48 hours of the testing date. Call 512-883-2400. That's 512-883-2400. Or go to www.txcovidtest.org. Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texans. This is the Recording Library of West Texans, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.